Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of L'Arche Portland Benefit Celebration on Saturday, October 24th from 6 to 7 p.m., streaming online. This benefit will highlight the gift of individuals with and without intellectual disabilities. There will be musical performances, an auction, and testimonials covering the mission and impact of L'Arche. Again, that's L'Arche Portland Benefit Celebration, Saturday, October 24th from 6 to 7 p.m., streaming online. You can find more information at kboo.fm on the right side of our homepage under Community Events.
This is your community-supported radio station, KBOO Portland. Before we get going with our programming, I want to remind everyone that you can donate today at kboo.fm/give. We aren't in the station to take your calls, but you can show your support by giving online. Again, that's kboo.fm/give. Or you can also mail a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Thank you.
Hi, this is Evelyn. Before we get started on tonight's show, I want to remind everyone that you can donate today at kboo.fm/give. We aren't at the station right now to take your calls, but you can show your support by giving online. Again, that's kboo.fm/give. You can also make a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Good evening. You are listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. My name is Emma, and I use she and her pronouns.
And my name is Jean. I am the co-host for the show, and I also use she and her pronouns. And we have our special guest this evening, Marcy Grace Frederick. From down in Newport.
Welcome to the show, Marcy. If you'd like to introduce yourself and your pronouns.
Thank you. Marcy Grace, she and her.
Great, thank you. Well, welcome to Transpositive. Jean mentioned that you live on the coast somewhere.
Yeah, I live in Toledo. It's about 6 to 8 miles inland from Newport.
Oh, cool. Yeah, neat. We had Claire Elizabeth Hall on the show last year, and she's down your way, I think.
Yes, I know Claire well.
Yeah. Well, welcome to Transpositive. Thank you so much for joining us. I have just heard so much about you, Marcy. I mean, I've seen you online. I've seen you at events. I know that you have a modest-sized footprint in your community. So welcome to Transpositive. And first of all, could you maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself? What do you do?
Yeah, what you doing lately? What are you doing down there?
Well, I am the director of Central Oregon Coast Trans Community. And lately I have just been trying to be there for the community and support the community within since COVID has started and we just had the fires down here up there in Otis and Rose Lodge. And but I've been also consulting and counseling and doing a little like life coaching for the trans community. And so I've got a few specific people that I have been helping the last year within their transition. And so that's kind of what I've been doing mostly down here. I'm also sit on the board of our local PFLAG chapter, Oregon Central Coast PFLAG. And I also sit on the Gender Health and Community Network of the Lynn Benton and Lincoln Counties. We're developing a resource guide for the trans and non-binary community so that there's safe spaces for them to go, not just for medical, though. It's for all aspects of life. Grocery stores, getting your hair cut, gyms, spiritual, so... And then I also sit on several other community advisory committees and just advise and help them.
Oh, so that's all.
Yeah.
That's all
you do. Yeah, that was quite a little. Well,
I probably have left out quite a bit, but you know, that's what's coming to mind right now. It keeps me pretty busy.
It must be great living out on the coast.
Yes. Yeah. I don't nearly take advantage of the beach as much as I need to or should to. But it is the most beautiful place to live. I was born and raised here. And so it's home.
You were going to say, Jean?
Yeah, I was. Question for you, Marcy. In terms of the support, the kind of the direct support, with other, you know, trans folks, are you running like us? Is there like us? Do you have like weekly support group meetings, or are you doing just basically one-on-one? How are you connecting, you know, directly with the community?
Yeah, so Central Oregon Coast Trans Community, we, before COVID hit, I was, because I just celebrated my first year in February of creating the groups, the support group. But before COVID happened, I was trying to create safe spaces, places that we could gather to commune and have a meal or whatever. And so we did have a couple events. One in November, it was a harvest party, and we did a big dinner, a potluck dinner, and we provided the turkey and kind of the basic base of the dinner, and then everybody brought potluck sides. And then in December, we did a holiday party where I actually was able to get gifts, and we did like a white elephant exchange. Everybody brought just like appetizer type stuff. And so we just had music playing and just really enjoyed ourselves. And that was in December. That was our last big event before COVID hit. We were doing a... bi-weekly meetings. We did one here in Toledo and one in Newport, and those were in person until COVID, of course. Yeah. And since then, we've been doing Zoom meetings every other Wednesday.
So how broad an area are you, do you have, you know, folks showing up from? Because I know the coast is, it's really pretty spread out. It's a lot of, yeah.
Yeah, well, on our Zoom meetings, we've had people as far as Coos Bay, up in Eugene. I've had some people from Portland join. It's kind of spread out. I kind of just, my page is public. And so if people from out of the area see it, you know, awesome. And I try to invite them and let them join. But I've reached out to other queer organizations like down in Astoria, and so I try to connect with them, and then Corvallis, and of course up in Portland. So I try to connect with all the people around Oregon. Uh-huh. But I've actually reached out as far as Texas. I've got a couple people up in Texas. I help.
Yeah.
I'm kind of helping all over.
Yay.
Marcy, what is it like living on the coast and being trans? How is that experience for folks?
I think it can be very difficult because it's a rural area. I live in Toledo, which is very red. A lot of Republicans, and so it can be tough. But I'm trying to create and build a community down here, and not just trans community, but the entire queer LGBTQIA2+ community, and try to bring everybody together. Since I started this, I've noticed that there are a lot of us down here, but we're so spread out, and so many people are still in the closet or just don't express who they are. And so I'm trying to, like I said, create those safe spaces and bring people together. And so it can be hard, but I'm trying to create that support system for everybody.
That's so great. What inspired you to get involved in this kind of work?
When I started my transition 4.5 years ago, there was absolutely no place that I felt was for me. There were no accessible resources. Nobody knew anything about transitioning and trans care. And so it was important to me. I'm going to get a little emotional here.
Sorry.
It was important to me to create that safe space for other people within their transition, so that they had someplace that they could go to ask those questions, because I didn't have that. I had to go online and ask questions of strangers. And so it gets real impersonal. It was very helpful. I'm grateful to the internet, but when you have somebody that can share your journey and your story, I just think it's more powerful.
Mm, thank you. That's a great story. I really appreciate that.
I'm going to go ahead and share, if it's okay, Marcy.
Yes.
Marcy and I met several years ago, and I think it's a good place to talk about that, because how we met, where we met, why we met, was a peer support relationship at one point, as Marcy was moving through her transition. And that's how she and I met. And, you know, we haven't had a lot of in-person, but it was that kind of connection. And just how important that is to us, to have, you know, someone or a small group of someones that we can actually really connect with.
That's great. So you both met in a peer support group for trans folks?
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah.
We've had lots of people on over the years who run groups like that. We've had representatives from PFLAG. Of course, a couple of months ago, we had Jackie on from Northwest Gender Alliance. Of course, the Q Center. We've had so many people from the Q Center and the Astoria Q Center. We just had on a couple months ago. So those peer support groups are so important for trans and non-binary folks, because they don't really, it's really easy to feel isolated. It doesn't matter where you are. It's really easy to feel isolated and to feel, you know, out of touch. And when you get together with other people who are your peers, like if you're transgender with your trans and non-binary friends, or if you're gay or lesbian or bisexual, like with your, you know, brothers and sisters, and, you know, also like out in the rural parts, I imagine in a lot of ways, it's just like getting together with queer folks must feel really good. you know, it doesn't matter if you're LGBTQIA plus or whatever. Is that how it is, Marcy, living out on the coast?
Yeah, because it's so Cis-centric that you tend to sometimes starve for the connection of your community. And so that's why it's very important that I do what I do, because I've been told by many people that, you know, when they come to my support groups, they're like, I've just been starving to be around my own community. And so, you know, being around cis people all day long, every day, you long and starve for that connection with other people who can relate to you.
I just congratulate you for all that you've achieved in these last several years, Marcy. You hit the scene, and you've been doing the deal, girl.
Yeah, right. What did you think when you first met me? Because I know that we had talked because of what you were doing, and that's basically how we met, was because I was having my surgery and I really didn't have any support. I had somebody bringing me up there, but they were basically just dropping me off. And so Jean was there to help with that, and I can't tell you how comforting that was.
Well, I've called Jean a couple of times. I've called her a transgender doula.
You know, well, thank you. But, you know, really, I think the operative, you know, point here for the listeners is, you know, internet connections, some of the, you know, the more impersonal, you know, connections. I mean, there's tremendous information. Oh, my God. I mean, compared to the way things used to be, we have so many resources and so many informational resources, but it's that personal connection that, you know, and that's what community is about to me. Okay. And so I think that's really the operative point here, is to actually really be there for our brothers, sisters, other community members, to actually show up and be there. That's really where the magic happens.
So Marcy, what I really want to know is, when is there going to be a naked beach on the Oregon coast? Because I am waiting for one. I mean, in Portland, I can go to Rooster Rock, and I can go to Savi Island, and they're both clothing optional. But to the best of my knowledge, there's no clothing optional beaches on the Oregon coast. So is your organization going to do something about that?
I don't know. I haven't thought about yeah. Okay. That right. Wasn't a thought. I have talked to a friend that wants to do, or was actually doing, a whole nudist thing someplace here in Toledo where I live, which was very shocking.
Wow.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a possibility.
I was gonna say they're all nude beaches, Emma. It just kind of depends on who's there.
That's true. It could, yeah. Jean and you were just talking a minute ago, and you were sort of getting into a little bit of your transition story. And I was wondering if you would feel comfortable sharing with us a little bit about either your coming out story or your transition story.
Yeah, that's fine. So do you want me to just start kind of from the beginning when I first decided to transition? Yeah. So 2014, December, my dad passed away. And I've known my entire life, of course, that I was different, not necessarily having the language for that and not understanding exactly what that was. So after he passed away, I just did a lot of soul searching. And I didn't want, after looking at my life and looking at my dad's life and death, it just made me look at my life and what I had done and what I hadn't done and who I was and who I wasn't. And I didn't want one more person to die that was in my life, in my family, and not know the true me and who I was. And so then that's when I started doing my research online, on internet, Googling, watching YouTube videos and other people's stories, and then connecting on Facebook support groups. And
isn't the internet great?
The internet is fabulous, absolutely fabulous. So then after I did my research and started listening to other people's stories, and it almost kind of mirrored mine and the experiences and things that I went through. And I came to the conclusion, the realization that this is who I am, that I am trans, and that, you know, I want to go forward with this. So in March 2016, I decided to see my therapist, who I had been seeing on and off for about 20 years. But the topic of being trans had never came up. So I told her that I wanted to transition. She got me in touch with a fabulous doctor down here, Dr. Gavin Shoemate. And I will talk about him in a little bit. And if I forget, ask me, because there's some stuff we need to talk. So she got me in touch with him. He got me started on my hormones. It was a little rocky in the beginning, just with the regimen and the medication I was on. And finally, we ended up getting to injections. And I just kind of sailed from there.
I love injections. That's just
right?
Yeah. Oh my God, it's so different. It's just
they're a beautiful thing. So I strongly advocate for injections or the palate, you know, and then down from there, the patches or creams. But I just, because I know that that's what works. I've really done my research. I've read a lot. So we got that figured out and got that started. And then I made my appointments with Doogie and Burley, and waited and just went on my transition. And there were struggles along the way, and it was hard, because when I started my transition, my therapist was supposedly had knowledge in trans care, but not really, as you probably know. So I had to find my way. I really kind of had to find my own way. And it was hard to have to start dressing and presenting female when I wasn't quite comfortable with that yet, but yet I seem to be getting urges from everybody else to do that and pushed into that. I really wish people would have just allowed me, because the way I wanted to do it was take the hormones, and then when I started to feel like I was blending or then I wanted to start dressing my part and how I felt more comfortable. But it was a struggle. It was a struggle, but I had a lot of help on the way. I really did. And honestly, it was help from cis people, because when I first started my transition, there was nobody down here. I knew nobody trans. I knew of PFLAG, but I had been to PFLAG before, and it was basically for parents and friends of gays and lesbians, and there was no gays or lesbians or trans people there. And so I really didn't think that was an organization for me to go and seek help. And I actually didn't get in contact with PFLAG until, like, I think it was about three and a half years later into my transition.
It looks like Gina has a question.
Yes. Yeah, Marcy, before you get too far from the point, a moment ago you said that you felt what encouraged or maybe pressured is kind of what I thought I heard, yes. You know, by folks to begin presenting before maybe you weren't, you really felt quite comfortable, you know, doing that. So my question for you is, it's like, where did that come from? Was that, you know, within the medical community, or was it from, what was the source of that pressure?
Well, I don't really want to say that my therapist pressured me, but I think she strongly urged me to go that way and that route, I think, because of, at that time, the outdated W path, and I can't remember the...
Okay, that makes perfect sense.
And then also my friend, who also helped me quite a bit along the way, and I kind of really looked up to in the beginning. And so it was from different places, and it wasn't really like anybody was telling me to do it, but you know, there's strong urges, and there's way people say things. And it was just before I was comfortable with that, because I didn't feel like I looked woman. I felt like I looked like a man in a dress is how I felt. And it was uncomfortable for me.
Yeah, so that's the old antiquated WPATH standards, where, you know, before you could even start hormones, you had to live in what they called the real life experience for at least a year, you know, living as, you know, out as your gender identity before, you know, a professional would even prescribe hormones. And that's, thank God that's, you know, and goddess that that's, you know, antiquated now. But yeah, I think that's interesting, because even within the time frame of your transition, that there was still a bad hangover within the community that is still kind of tiered back to that whole mindset. I actually, you know, experienced, you know, a certain amount of that, you know, myself, though it was not really technically required, you know, to push you. Anyway, thank goodness that not everyone has to do that these days.
Is it just in my head, but it's just like, nowadays it just doesn't seem like it's a big deal. I mean, like anybody even really cares about it. I mean, I remember that standard too. And the kind of thing that they used to tell us back then was, they'd be like, oh, you have to do this because it's such a radical switch from like living as a man to living as a woman. And you have to like learn how to accept your second class subservient status. And, you know, I mean, all the things that you're going to be interested in now, like doing laundry and, you know, doing the cleaning and, you know, taking care of the kids. And it's like, I feel like is it just Portland, or is it like, I think things have changed. I mean, the influence of the genderqueer community has really changed the whole thing, like more than anything I can possibly think of. More, you know, the influx of trans men, there's so many more now that made a difference, but the genderqueer and like completely changing all of the frameworks about what is male and female binary, like I think has just changed everything for forever, probably.
Well, hopefully. But so anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt your...
I'm sorry.
So let's, yeah, no, no, that's fine.
Your story, and we're just like going on. Sorry.
Yeah, no. So if you can even remember where you were,
I don't. was in my transition. I had started hormones.
Yes, yes.
So I started hormones. It was about, it was July that year. So I started transition when I went to the therapist in March. And then by July 14th that year, 2016, I was started my hormones. So that's where my journey really started, was once I started my hormones. It was amazing, and it was bumpy, but we got through that. And then I finally was able to get in to see Doogie about my bottom surgery, and that was I'm still to this day blown away and amazed and can't believe I am where I am, and I'm just in awe of what can be done surgically. So
oh my God, it's so amazing. It's just
well stated for the radio.
Yeah I mean, without saying anything, you know, that's violating FCC standards, it's just amazing. I mean, what they can do with the human body is just, it's great. I'm so glad to be born when I was born. And to really, this is like a gift. I mean, I feel like it's like the greatest, for me, it was like really the greatest gift of my life, I think. It's just, anyways.
Yeah, me too. You know, the hormones did wonders. They did a lot, but I didn't truly feel myself and whole until I had that surgery, until I had that bottom surgery. And from day one, from the moment I woke up, I felt complete. I felt complete, and I still do. I mean, there's things that I still need to have revision, and there's some things that I would like to fix and have done, but I'm not so disabled by my dysphoria and my discomfort anymore, and I'm actually able to live life and not just exist. So I had my bottom surgery September 2018, so that was 2 years after I started my hormones. And then October, the very next month, I went to a Halloween party and blew up my ACL. And so that's been another journey along the way. I'm still recouping from that. But so October, I blew up my ACL, and then
one heck of a party.
Oh, it was. Okay, so I'm going to tell you exactly what happened, because I know everybody's going to be like, well, how'd you do that? Okay, so Richard Simmons lookalike, a little short guy with curly hair and the whole sequin tank top and everything. Okay, comes in, prance in, playing his music, his exercise music, with a whole barrage of his girlfriends behind him in leotards and leg warmers, doing his exercises to him. So he hops up on a table and starts doing exercises and directing them. And I, dressed up in my little white unicorn outfit, pranced up there and decided I was going to join in. And I got to my third jumping jack and pop, went my knee, and I thought, oh, and someone was recording it and videoing it. And I was like, oh, you did not just do that. Yeah, it was it was quite painful. So that's, Richard Simmons and my knee, that's how that happened.
I can relate to the enthusiasm at that phase, though.
Right. Yeah. I can remember being like, being the little fat kid that I was, used to sit up at midnight watching Richard Simmons infomercials and just bawling my eyes out, wishing I could. So yeah, it was kind of trying to live my dream. Moving on, I was trying to heal from that, because I didn't know what it was, and I didn't know exactly what I had done to my knee, and I couldn't get an MRI because I had a spinal stimulator that was in my back, and we actually had to have that removed before I could get the scan on my knee. So that comes later. December came along, and New Year's, that was my first New Year's, and I was going to go out and have some fun, and I did go out, and until a point I did have some fun. But this was 3 months after my surgery, and I was still dilating, and I was still on the small to next largest dilator. That night, and it's hard for me, but that night I was raped that night, and that took a toll on me for the next year. I was working through my trauma with that, trying to recognize that it was rape. Because for a year I would call it my sexual assault. I didn't actually identify what it was. So I got through that though. And I know that that's part of my journey, and I try to learn from that and grow from that so that I can help others. But I try to urge people that when they start their transition and when they have these surgeries, it makes you feel free and you have a sense of freedom that you had never had before. And sometimes that freedom can get you in trouble, and you just got to be careful.
Yeah.
It's we didn't get to learn these things progressively as we grew up.
No, I had to recognize my vulnerability that I never felt I had before. I never seen. I guess maybe that was a privilege that I had. But after my transition, and after my bottom surgery, that's kind of where after my rape is when I really realized how vulnerable I could be, and that I was, and that I needed to be aware of everything, my surroundings and my safety.
Hi, you're listening to KBOO Community Radio. We're talking with Marcy Grace Frederick from Toledo, Oregon, about an organization that she helped start. What is it called, Marcy? The Central Oregon Coast Trans Community. And her transition story. And Jean is joining us tonight, so...
Hi, this is Emma. I just want to take a quick break from this interview to remind everyone that you can donate today at kboo.fm/give. We aren't at the station to take your call, but you can support by giving online. Again, that's kboo.fm/give. Or you can also make a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
Anyways, well, let's continue. So after that happened, Marcy, then what happened after that?
So after that, I just, like I said, it sent me into a whirlwind, and I had to heal mentally and emotionally that next year. And then that following year is when I actually started my support group. It was that following February. I realized that nothing was going to happen with that. He was never arrested. And there was nothing ever brought against him. It took me, and partially was because I didn't go in right away. It took me over a week to report it.
But that's not your fault, Marcy.
I know, but you know, I had washed my clothes. I had gotten rid of any evidence that there may or may not have been. And there was just steps that I could have taken that might have helped with that. But because I didn't report it, and I didn't report it right away, and I didn't save that evidence, things didn't turn out how I maybe wished they would have. So I had to also learn to accept that and process that. And so it lit a fire under me. I was determined to just help other people and just put that passion into something. And so I started my support group February of 2019. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, I guess that, you know, some of us, you know, must be lucky enough to have, you know, enough cis women who are supportive in our lives. to, you know, kind of convey some of these things that we would have learned otherwise, you know, as we grew up. But some of us don't. And I think that's, you know, back to what I said earlier in the interview here and in this conversation, you know, there's a definite need for us to, you know, have, you know, establish these one-on-one, one-on-two kind of, friendships, big sisterhoods, you know, something. I don't know what you want to call it. You know, but it's definitely peer support for those of us that have gone before to those that are coming behind us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, what it's like, that's what made sense to me. And that's what I'm hearing in your story, Marcy, you know, that there's a huge motivation there to pass along your lived experience.
Correct. Right, right.
That's so great. So now you've had the Central Oregon trans community, this group, for 2 years now.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. 2.5 going on 3. Yeah. This February will be 3 years. So, yeah. So it, yeah, it's just, it's amazing. I started that group, and then I think a couple months later is when I was asked to sit on the board of PFLAG, and then around the same time I also joined the GHCN, the Gender Health and Community Network of Lynn Benton and Lincoln County. And I just kind of started getting more involved at that point, after I started healing from what had happened to me. I needed to be involved with the community. I wanted to educate. I wanted to bring awareness to trans and trans healthcare and the things that we go through, not with just within the healthcare, but within our life. Because most people, I find that a lot of people don't know, or they say they don't know a trans person. And it's, you know, they don't know a trans person that they know of.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Right. Well, and, you know, if I wasn't so open, there would be a lot of people that wouldn't know I was trans. And I'm still trying to recognize that, because I still feel like I'm visibly trans, like I'm obviously trans. But from the feedback that I get from other people is that no, that I blend quite well, and that several people I've actually outed myself to, and they didn't realize that, and they were shocked.
Yeah, me too. I don't remember exactly when that happened. Like, for me, it happened like maybe 2 or 3 years into my transition. I think that's when it was like there was that stage, and like where for a long time you're getting sir, and then sir, ma'am, and then ma'am, sir, ma'am. And it's like after like 3 years, it's just ma'am.
Correct. Yeah, it's like stages of, and it's like people can see your transition. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they go from a point of calling you the complete wrong gender, and then not knowing what gender to call you, and then, you know, finally getting to that point where you pass or blend enough that, you know, you're always being correctly gendered. And that's where I'm at. You know, I don't ever get misgendered except for a few family members.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice. And it's nice to be there to support people who are, what kind of people come to your organization, Marcy? Like, is it like all kinds of people?
Yeah.
We have some non-binary people. I've got a few trans women and a few trans guys that are within our support group. And there's some non-binary people. And the people that I'm helping one-on-one personally, I'm helping a couple trans women, and I also help a couple different trans men. Like I said, and two of the trans men are actually in Texas, and one of them is a cousin of mine by marriage, and so.
I don't want to stop you, but I want to revisit that point. I really do. I want to explore that point. But go ahead.
What point was that?
Oh, that because this is within my experience as well in terms of peer support. It surprised the hell out of me, honestly. I have provided direct peer support to, you know, several trans men as well as trans women. And it's beautiful. It's mm-hmm. beautiful. It's such an expansion of my own understanding and my own, you know, it was just, I don't know, it was just awesome. And it surprised the heck out of me, actually, that there was way more than enough commonality for us to have that kind of a very close, you know, peer support relationship.
Right. Yeah, because I never thought that I would be helping the trans community the way I do, and let alone helping a trans man. I just didn't think that I had knowledge or experience or would it be able to help with that. But because our journeys are so very, very similar, it comes quite easy to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing, and I'm not sure very many folks. We seem to exist as two separate, you know, trans.
I hate to use
the word community sometimes, but yeah.
Although I think it's one of those things too, Jean, like here in Portland, because there's so many queer people, like it's really easy to like break off into all of your different little silos, gay, lesbian, you know, this and.
But we use the word community. I mean, we toss that around pretty freely. And, you know, my own observation and experience is that there's actually precious little of that. But, you know, in building community, you know, where does that start? It starts, you know, one-on-one, one-on-two. I mean, it starts with actually interacting with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, and educating the queer community as well, because they didn't. It really surprised me the lack of knowledge within the queer community, and not only the queer community but the trans community itself. I still get really surprised that the knowledge of it isn't more visible or widespread. That's why I kind of focus with the education part, because I think there needs to be awareness. It needs to be normalized. We need to be normalized and stop looking at it as freaks or something that's abnormal or a sexual deviancy.
So just to change the subject for a minute, just for fun, Marcy, what is your favorite beach on the coast? Like, what's the best beach?
Oh, yeah.
Honestly, because I said I don't take advantage of the beach as much as I should, I'm gonna say the Nye Beach is probably where I go the most. I'm sure there's other more beautiful beaches that I haven't experienced, but that's probably the one that I go to visit the most, probably because maybe it's also the closest.
Nye Beach is the best. It's like, I think Nye Beach really has that California feel going to it, you know? I mean, it's got like the parking area, it's got the boardwalk sort of area, and it's just like, it's in the arts district of Newport, and it's got that really cool like walking space right around Nye Beach, and it's a nice flat beach, you know, it's really easy walking. So yeah, that's I like Nye Beach too. And Nye Beach always has life. There's always somebody there doing something like selling some beads or, you know, fishing or what, you know, exercising or something.
Yeah.
Painting. A lot of people down in Nye Beach painting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like Nye Beach.
Lots of artists down there.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay, back to transgender stuff.
Back to my transition story, yes. So I started my group and started helping people and started getting involved. And the more I started getting involved, I used to go to a church here in South Beach. And it's a very large church. Most people around here know this church. And I started transitioning while going to this church. I went to this church for 5 years. After I started transitioning and I started becoming more comfortable with myself, I went to their women's support group meeting. The first meeting I went to was very uncomfortable. It was just very uncomfortable. I didn't feel welcomed, to be honest. So I continued to go to church, though. I didn't go to the women's group meeting. I think I might have even pulled back a little bit from going to church as often. And then I tried to go a second time. And again, it was uncomfortable, very uncomfortable. I didn't feel included. I didn't feel comfortable or part of that group of women. So continued to go to church, and I think after a while I kind of just slowly stopped going to this particular church and just really wasn't going to church. But I was still going to events, like they hold Thanksgiving every year, and other things, and have dinner. And so I would attend these things. And someone had invited me to the women's group again, a third time. And I thought, well, third time's a charm. Let's go. Third time I went, and there was a ride arranged for me, and she picked me up, and I went, and again, I felt uncomfortable. But this time, I actually told them I was trans, the women at my table, because we were separated in different groups. Yeah, I was honest. I felt like I you know, because I feel like who I am, I need to live in my truth. I need to live who I am. Not necessarily that they needed to know I'm trans, but I was trying to be vulnerable and let them know who I was and my journey. And so after that, and I don't want to say I got shocked faces, because you know how sometimes you get those shocked faces. But I tried to arrange to come back again. And the person that gave me the ride made an excuse and said that they weren't going. And then at the very next meeting, the person that had invited me the time before asked me how come I wasn't there. And I explained to her that the person that gave me a ride said they weren't coming and all that stuff. And she proceeded to tell me that they were there at the meeting and didn't call me or say that they were coming. So at that point, I knew what happened. I knew I was being purposely excluded. And so then this person that had invited me eventually came to one of my support group meetings, because I try to keep it open. It's just for the trans community, but I never know who might come out as trans. And so I try not to really exclude too many people, but I also—
Marcy, how can people find out about the Central Coast trans community? Like, is there a website or—
Yes, Central Oregon Coast Trans Community is on Facebook. We have both a public and private page, so anybody can go ahead and join at any time. And it's there for everybody.
Thanks.
Say that again one more time, Marcy. Say it again so people can jot it down.
Central Oregon Coast Trans Community, and it's on Facebook.
Thank you.
So we're talking tonight with Marcy Grace Frederick. This hour has gone so fast, believe it or not. We've only got like about 4 minutes left in the show. Oh my goodness, where's this hour gone? But we've been talking tonight with Marcy Grace Frederick from the Central Oregon Coast Trans Community about her organization and about transitioning and transition stories, being included, excluded. And we're joined with Jean. Marcy, we've only got about 2 or 3 minutes left. Is there anything that we haven't covered tonight that would be really important to include that people need to know?
Important to know? I don't know. If there's people wanting to transition or looking to transition and are wondering to find the perfect time, now is the perfect time. Putting it off, waiting, it'll just come back around.
Yeah. Do you have any questions?
I just wanted to say very quickly that I'm sorry that we didn't have time to really explore your experience with your spiritual and church experience, but I really appreciate that you spoke about that, because I know Emma, myself, others, that's a huge piece, that that's that whole spiritual support aspect of transition, and in life in general, that we don't explore much.
Why don't we have Marcy back on another show so we can like finish her story? I think this is—
Why don't we have Marcy join us as one of the co-conspirators on
the show? Yeah, totally. Well, let's
Marcy, you could do it. You could do it, girl.
I'm up for it. I'll do it for you and beyond.
Join the cooperative.
You're witnessing trans positive herstory tonight, folks. Live right here on KBOO.
Yay.
So, well, great. Well, Marcy, looks like we'll have you back then. In the meantime, if people want to find out about the Central Oregon Coast Trans Community, can you tell us one more time, where do they go to find that?
Facebook. We have both public and private page. Facebook is where you can contact, or you can friend me, but send me a little message. Let me know what it is that I can do to help you.
And you're doing your Zoom meetings, and those are posted on the Facebook as well?
Zoom meetings are posted on Facebook. We usually post them the day of or the day before, but they are posted, yes. And that's every other Wednesday.
Well, thank Marcy. Excellent. I think we'll have you back then in November and do a two-parter. So thank you so much for joining us tonight.
So good to see you, girl.
Thank you. You too. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2, 3, 3, 1, 2,
Portland.
This is Takimba, the host of the Melting Pot Radio Show. During these crazy times of COVID and social distancing, KBOO Radio and its connection to community are more valuable than ever. It's important to hear real news during the day that